The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. That meeting tonight with the city of Medford, I just want to make sure people knew that this is not an actual city council session. This is what's called a study session. And so it's an informal conversation about the city business and what they're informally conversing tonight. And by the way, it is 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock when this is going on. In the Prescott Room, this is in the Medford Police Department area, or that neighborhood here, they'll be talking about the Vision Implementation Committee update. Oh, Vision 2040. Yeah, there's a lot of climate-friendly, equitable community nonsense in that report, I'm sure, that the council will be listening to. But, of course, they've been ordered by a past governor, right? Executive orders. There we go. Eugene Emerald's number two. That's going to be the one I really watch, because not that I'm against baseball, but I'm really for the taxpayer, and I figure that any kind of creative funding will be essentially a giveaway for the Eugene Emeralds. There's a reason why Eugene turned them down for their $100 million ball field there, okay? And it had been there a number of years, So we'll see what the sales job will be like, okay? Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. But if you wanted to attend the meeting, that's where you go. 11 minutes after 8, this is The Bill Myers Show.
This hour of The Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
It's Kim.
Hear KMED in Grants Pass on 105.9 K290 AF Rogue River. In South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
It's been a few weeks, I guess, maybe a few months. I don't know. Time flies quickly these days since I last talked with Todd Sheets. Todd Sheets is the author of the newsletter on wealth and progress, and he's currently available free of charge on Substack. Great reason to sign up on Substack. And his latest book, 2008, What Really Happened. Todd, it's great to have you on. Welcome to the show.
Bill, thanks for having me back. It's delightful to be with you again.
Yeah, and I had to tell you, 2008, What Really Happened was a great read. I'm about halfway through it. I'm kind of skipping in and out of it. But you ended up doing a real history then of what happened to lead up to when everything just went to hell in a handbasket in the big financial crisis. The last time we were sitting around here with our hair on fire and thanking everybody, you know, thinking that the world is just going crazy, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, definitely. There was a lot of things that led to that, although they can kind of be boiled down to a couple of key elements, you know, which was, first the expansion of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which triggered the housing bubble, and then the failure of the Federal Reserve to understand that the low interest rates they engineered in the early 2000s in reaction to the collapse of the dot-com bubble only fanned the flames of that housing bubble, which was already in process, and brought the housing markets to the point of collapse, and then brought us into the downturn and the great financial crisis that followed, and the panic that kind of sat between those two situations.
And so, of course, the interesting part is, as usual, the big boys were bailed out, and the little people left. Well, screw you, right? Essentially.
Yes, exactly. And very unfortunately, in addition to that, the Fed has largely failed to understand the role that it played. And as a result of that, they've engaged in the same policies, after the financial crisis and the recession to try and revive the economy. And in doing so, they've blown asset bubbles at some level in other parts of the marketplace as well. So, today stock prices are very highly valued relative to traditional norms. Housing prices have become very highly valued again. It doesn't mean we're on the verge of another collapse, because lending practices and things have changed some.
Well, I also think, though, that it's a bit frozen up right now, because if you have a 3% mortgage, unless you die, you're not giving that up, are you, Todd? You're just not going to.
Well, Yeah, that's one factor. People don't want to sell and give up that and have to refinance at a higher rate. And younger people can't afford to buy a home at these prices. Mm-hmm. The incomes just don't line up with what the cost of mortgages are. And so it's freezing, you know, it's locking some people in place, as you're suggesting, and freezing others out of the market right now. So
it's a great book. I highly recommend people pick up a copy of this, 2008, What Really Happened. The reason I wanted to invite you back on, though, is that you seem to have a pretty clear eye view on a lot of things financial, and you're on Wealth in Progress, a newsletter. I'm going to sign up for that. I didn't realize you put that out for free. I'm going to sign up for that and keep up with you.
Yeah.
I read a lot of financial blogs, and I'm kind of reading a lot of whipsawing back and forth, too, you know, on various people. I don't know. Is there anybody that's kind of in the middle of it? It's like it's either that the tariff wars are the worst thing that ever happened, or it's like, hey, it had to happen. Shut up. Let it play out. It seems like there's two ways of looking at it. Is there any way to kind of split that baby, you know, split that in half and come somewhere in the middle of it and understand that, yeah, there's really problems here that needed to be addressed, but maybe this wasn't done the right way or quite with enough finesse? I don't know. How do you see it playing right now? In fact, you have a brand new piece out, this Tariffs and Trade, Liberation Day or Damnation Day, right? It's either
or. Exactly. That's part one in what's going to be an extended series that I dedicate to this issue. And I'm glad you brought it up the way that you did, because the idea behind the Substack newsletter, which, as you mentioned, is currently free, is that I want to write, you know, kind of for the middle 60-70% of the country, you know, who wants a factually based analysis of what's happening, and not something that is, you know, either on one side just anti whatever is getting done, or on the other side just pro whatever is getting done.
Because the people that are probably most upset, about tariffs, are people that profited greatly, most likely, in the status quo, which is in trouble in the first place, right? Is that kind of where we're coming from, really?
Well, there's no question that's true. So, but, you know, having said all of that, I do think that there are some very important and legitimate reasons to reconsider kind of the global trading structure that has evolved after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And we could start with, for example, what, you know, if we wanted to put these tariffs into a couple of different categories, we might start with strategic tariffs, which would be tariffs designed to deal with, you know, for lack of a better term, geopolitical issues. And there's none of those issues that is more important than our relationship with China, who also happens to be the biggest driver of the trade deficits that developed in this country over the last few decades. And so I do think that there's, you know, a need for a resetting of the relationship with China. We went down this path with them after communism had failed so miserably, and it left so many people, you know, by many estimates, as many as 500 to 800 million people impoverished, you know, living on less than $2 a day. We went down this path of helping bring them into the international economy, marketplace, global trading system, whatever you will, kind of under the idea that upward mobility for their citizens would lead eventually to other freedoms, political freedoms and democracy.
Which is kind of a nonsense thing. That's a nonsense thing that neoliberals believe in the United States, that all of a sudden trade and we'll be happy, and then Jeffersonian democracy breaks out. Right?
Exactly. I think that was one of the great miscalculations. And unfortunately, what, you know, has happened is it's only resuscitated and emboldened a force in geopolitical politics, which is now engaging, you know, in outward aggression against the interests of the United States and other free countries on many fronts, including trade. And so that is something that has to be addressed. And given how far they have developed, you know, they've become the second largest economy in the world, second to ours. And as I mentioned, you know, they're the major source of our trading deficits. That is a relationship that needs to be addressed, you know, in a very forthful and far-sighted way. And there are going to be costs to addressing that because they've become such a big player on the international scene, and because our relationship economically has become so deep with them in terms of, source of goods, supply chains, and all of those types of things. So I think that area strategically is one that has to be addressed, and there's going to be some difficulty, and it's better now than later.
Yeah. Todd Sheets joins me, by the way. He is, of course, talking about On Wealth and Progress. That's his newsletter, available on Substack. But 2008, What Really Happened was his book, which I just think was great. This is why I invited you back in here. One of the things I wanted to dispel, and I think you addressed this in the Liberation or Damnation Day piece, is that this is not Great Depression triggering kind of stuff. And I'm glad you brought up something in this. I'm just doing this from memory after having looked at it last night. But one of the biggest things that caused the Great Depression, they always want to say it was a Smoot-Hawley tariffs, right? That's what I heard for a long time. I heard that when I was a kid in school, in history class, when we go over that that kind of stuff. That's what I was told. But then what they never talk about were sovereign defaults, countries defaulting on their debt after World War One. Wasn't that part of it? And that barely gets a mention, but that was really what was going on, wasn't it? The interlocking, collapsing of economies?
Absolutely. There were two very powerful elements to the Great Depression. One was international and one was domestic. And the international element has not gotten enough attention. And I think even the attention that it has received has been somewhat misdirected. But if we go to the core of the issue there, it's what you just brought up. World War One caused the major European economies, which were basically Germany, France, and Great Britain, to incur enormous deficit spending to finance their war efforts, which led to extraordinarily high debt levels that they couldn't afford to service, and enormous inflations, which, you know, pushed their currencies completely out of alignment. And those issues were never resolved. Throughout the 1920s, they engaged in a number of failed policy attempts to try and bring things back into alignment, all of which failed and all of which collapsed in the early 1930s. And that was the key driver of the international side of the Great Depression, which many people here, you know, we were just taught that this was primarily a domestic event, and that was simply not the case. Now, domestically, but let's just stay with that for 1 second. The key takeaway there is fiscal responsibility. Now, if you get into a war, you may not have a choice, but it shows how devastating, you know, allow significant deficits that push indebtedness up and that inevitably lead to inflation can be for even substantial, you know, those were the major and leading economies of the world at that point in time. So that was one whole lesson to learn there. The second big factor was domestic, which was that when the banking failure started here in the United States, which was in late 1930, after the economy had turned down, but not drastically so, the major problem, domestic issue, was the failure of the Federal Reserve to step in and do the job that it had been created for in 1913, which was to provide liquidity to the system to keep the panics from spreading and causing even otherwise healthy banks to fail.
In other words, it was there to always be the lender of last resort, right? Open up the door.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea is a panic starts because there's something wrong with one or two banks in a certain area. People become afraid and they try and take their money out of other banks, which then forces them to fail, even though they're otherwise sound. And the Fed was created in 1913 to address that issue. There had been private market systems in place, which had addressed that before that time. But the Fed was created in 1913 to do that, and it inexplicably failed to do its job, which the Fed itself has acknowledged now, you know, decades and decades later, that they played this, that they made these mistakes, and that these mistakes were the primary domestic cause of the Great Depression. So the important point that you brought up that, you know, I tried to make in that piece is there is a fair amount of fear-mongering going on from both the right and the left.
Yes.
From people who disagree with what Trump is doing on these tariffs, and they're bringing up Smoot-Hawley as a way to kind of conjure up, you know, the potential catastrophe of the Great Depression.
Well, yeah, this is the bludgeon with which to apply to Trump's head in his tariff policy, right?
Exactly. And the fact of the matter is, nothing that is being done today is a repeat of the mistakes that led us into the catastrophe of the Great Depression.
And that's a good takeaway, and that's why I thought your piece was important, and I wanted to share that with people for that very reason. And like I said, so much of my adult time here on this earth, Todd, has been recovering from my history lessons in government school back in the day. You know, and that's why I even like the title of the book, 2008, What Really Happened. Okay, here's what they said happened. Here's what's really happened. And all that kind of stuff. So here we are in today's world. President Trump essentially is intentionally dynamiting a bit of the old world order, wouldn't you say? When it comes, you know, the globalist neoliberal trade system, which has been our way for what, at least since World War II, is that a fair assessment of what we're looking at right now at this time with the tariffs?
That's a perfect assessment of it.
Okay, so we're at a controlled demolition. Now, could it be a controlled demolition for not just reindustrializing? Could it be a controlled demolition to get people to buy treasuries? Because, you know, President Trump says he wants those interest rates lower. Well, there's a number of ways you can get interest rates lower so that people will buy homes and open up factories and do all that kind of stuff. You can go into a depression or a recession. That tends to take the interest rates down, but that's not fun. You know, nobody wants to do that. Or, as Martin Armstrong was writing the other day, you make everybody think that the stock market, you shouldn't have your money in the stock market right now, so put it in treasuries. You think that's a reasonable theory? I thought that was fascinating when I was reading about that.
Yeah, I've heard that from other commentators who I also, you know, respect and think highly of. And I think that my perspective on that would be that could be a residual consequence of what's happening right now. But I don't think it's the driving motivation.
You don't? Okay. What do you think is that driving motivation then, Todd?
I think the driving motivation for Trump is that the idea that this post-World War II trading system that has developed, which initially was started to try and help Europe recover from the devastation that they had brought upon themselves and Japan, and that over time evolved to a somewhat unfair relationship between us and them, which they are more than happy to leave in place for as long as we're allowed for that to happen.
In other words, we pay for their defense essentially too, right? That kind of thing.
Absolutely. You know, they're engaging in practices that are unbalanced in terms of trade with us, not to the extent of what we've seen in China, but they're out there, and we are also paying for their defense systems. And frankly, on top of all of that, they have mismanaged their economies in such a manner that those economies are really no longer sources of growth and upward mobility and prosperity, which means that they have limited value to us as a trading partner. And I think all of those factors, you know, from Trump's perspective, as I perceive it, of course, I don't know exactly what he's thinking. Nobody does. But
you can surmise some of it from your observations of him. Sure. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, he's looked at the impact of that and of the rise of China and then now Vietnam and to some extent Mexico. Part of what's happening in Mexico is a reflection of, you know, China moving production over there after the first round of Trump tariffs. And he's looking at the impact of that on working class Americans. And he thinks that this whole system needs to be reset to give, you know, those people, i.e. the working class Americans, a better shot at upward mobility and to re-level the international trading system in a way that's much more fair from our perspective and gives our people a better chance at rising up.
What does your gut tell you?
The motivation.
You know, since Trump tends to work more from his gut than from any, you know, particular set of economic principles, okay? It's just kind of like, okay, this is what I think. That's just kind of the way he works, okay? Do you believe, given what you've seen so far, that maybe a year from now when we'll be talking about the midterm elections, or maybe in August of next year when we're talking about the midterm elections, that we'll be laughing about all the concern that is being expressed right now? What do you think?
I don't know if it'll happen that quickly, but I think that there is a very good chance that this will be somewhat like what happened with Reagan in the early 80s, where as soon as he came into office, he took on the high interest rates by giving the Fed the political support they needed to shove interest rates up into the low double-digit range.
Oh, man, I remember that, 30% interest rates, 12% interest rates on mortgages. I remember it well. I do.
Absolutely. Even Treasury bills got up to like 14-15%.
That's wild.
And that kind of thing. That did lead to a recession, but then those interest rates came down, and along with the other reforms that Reagan introduced, it kicked off a 15 to 20 year run of economic growth and upward mobility that, really created a new round of opportunity for many people within the country, myself included. I was fortunate enough to come into the workforce at that time. So, I think in the hopeful case here is that, Trump lives up to his own self-built reputation, as the artful deal maker, and he is able to reorder the global trading system in a way that deals with these issues with China, and that recreates a better sense, a better environment and a better opportunity for working class people who have been left behind over the last 20 or 30 years. And I do think those are his objectives.
All right. Todd, final question I'm going to kind of go here is, isn't it a little bit nonsensical to focus on strictly trade deficits? Because when you have the world's reserve currency, which we have, it's an amazing privilege because we can print funny money and we get real stuff in return. Okay? It's we get to export inflation. It's also a burden, though, too, because essentially you have to run trade deficits. Otherwise, there's no dollars with which the rest of the world gets to conduct trade. But yet all I ever hear is talk about trade deficit, trade deficit, trade deficit, as if for some reason it's actually a hard cost. Now, there may be cultural costs on factories. You don't have your comparative advantage, to be able to manufacture underwear here, as an example. How do you see that?
Yeah, I basically agree with you. I'd put these tariffs in three categories. One would be strategic, like what we're talking about with China. A second would be the reciprocal term that Trump's team came up with, which I think is a good one, which involves leveling the playing field.
Right.
Which I also think is a fair and a good objective. And then the third one would be protectionist, which I think is what you're getting at. And I agree with you, to the extent you're pursuing protectionist trade strategies, I think that's a long-term losing game, because that's effectively having the government try and direct where the economy is going to go. And there's just too much of a long history of failure of that, to have much confidence in that approach.
Okay. So we see kind of eye to eye on this. It's kind of nonsensical to think that, I'm really upset that Vietnam is making underwear and sending them here. It's just, we're a wealthy country. They're a poor country, relatively speaking. That's the kind of stuff that's going to happen in these sort of worlds.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, Bill, I hate to do this, but I've got to jump off for another engagement here. So.
Okay. I'm very sorry. I'll get all your information up and we turn into a pumpkin, but great job on this. Get you all up there. Okay.
Thanks, Bill. Enjoyed talking with you again.
All right. See, I ran long. I turned into a pumpkin with him, but still. You can find out more about Todd Sheets, and his website, by the way, is on Substack, substack.com, and just search for On Wealth and Progress. I will put it up on today's show blog on KMED.com. Some pretty good thinking out there, and it's good to find someone. In fact, he even talks about it, being this moderate sort of in the middle, able to see both sides of it, and I can really appreciate that, because a lot of times when you're going and you're looking for information on Trump, it's either like, we love everything this guy does. There's nothing he, it's like, it's just the political god. And then we hate this guy. He's the devil. And I think the truth is somewhere in between these extremes.
Ready to upgrade your roof? And KMED.com. News Talk 106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
And she is Monica. Monica, we appreciate you being here this morning. What's on your mind?
I just want to let you know about the gentleman you just had on. I really appreciated that.
And that's why I invited him back in. I was reading his book a few months ago when he first brought it out, and I appreciated his, he's not really looking at it from an ideological point of view per se. It's like, he really is a more, he'll slip back and forth depending on what the facts say. And we could use a lot more of that these days, in my opinion.
Yes. You know? I've been sitting back waiting for somebody to come out and say, okay, people, I mean, I'm 76 and I've been through so many of these things that just sit back, just wait and see, and let's, you know, tune out all the other crap and let it run. But it's going to go one way or the other.
Yeah, and one way or it's way it is beyond our pay grade. Okay, that's the one thing we do have to understand. But I did want to try to bring some understanding, and I thought he had pretty good bead on this. There is some necessity to reorder our trade issue. What we want to make sure that we do is that we don't throw babies out with the bathwater. And as an example, you know, crushing Vietnam is not going to help make us great necessarily. You know, we have to maybe pick and choose some of these battles. And I think those are now being sorted out because countries are coming and saying, okay, let's cut a deal. Let's do something. And then let's get this a little better balanced. And that's good. And that's the way it should. But China is a strategic problem, though, more than even a trade problem. Mm-hmm. And
China is a horrible problem.
Yeah, and that's why you have to be a little tougher on the China thing. And
I just want to know why they're still on the stock exchange. They put them on there to help them out. They helped themselves out, that's for sure. But they're still on there.
Well, they are. They were given most favored nation trading status a long time ago, and there's been no talk about changing any of that.
Yeah, that needs to be changed. That needs to be changed. That'll kill them.
Mm.
That'll kill him.
Was there something else on your mind too, Monica?
Yes.
Just curious.
The baseball field thing.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, people that don't know, let me just mention so they know what we're talking about. Tonight, Medford City Council is going to entertain a talk with the Eugene Emeralds, and I'm just very concerned. I'm not a big fan of sports ball socialism. Okay. I've made this clear. You know, if they want to come, that's great. Might be able to help. Grease some skids, but I don't like the idea of taxpayers building them stadiums. That's all.
Okay. My husband and I, when he was alive, we always went to see the Oakland A's mm-hmm. when they were here.
Right.
Then all of a sudden they were gone. But when we went, it was never crowded. And it was just a small little stadium area. And we would take our friends with us sometimes and everything. We thoroughly enjoyed it. We'd rather do that in the summertime than go to a movie or something like that. And, but then they were gone.
Now, was that when they were the Timberjacks at that point, Monica?
It was the Oakland A's.
Oh, it was the Oakland A's, just the actual Oakland A's. Okay, and earlier.
Yeah,
I enjoyed going to see the Southern Oregon Timberjacks at that point. I love baseball. I mean, I will honestly admit this, of all the sports, I love baseball. And I enjoy that. I think it's a very social sport and a great family-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, the experience of Eugene with the Emeralds is that, people will go see them, but it's the same.
How many?
It's the same.
How many?
It's like it's a couple thousand people that have been watching them for years. The same 2,000 big baseball fans that would come see them, you know, when they come into town, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but it there's not that much for us to be able to do to build them a stadium. Build it yourself. I mean, come on. I don't know what's the matter with Medford sometimes. I'm just like, I'm with you on the other crap, too.
Well, Monica, the thing about the city of Medford, I'm not blaming the town fathers and the people. See, Medford, like every other city in Oregon for the most part, with rare exception, we've decided to deindustrialize, we didn't. It was kind of forced upon us, whether it was timber or some other issues. And then we have the enviros that are saying, you can't do anything. You can't do anything. We don't want you. We want you growing grapes. Now we want you growing dope. And now it's like, now we want you growing homeless camps, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what we're told.
Right.
But we don't produce anything. And so they're looking at ways other than medical, and even medical, even though it's a wealth contributor or wealth producer for people who are in the business per se, it's an expense on society. They're looking to find a way, looking at trying to get, economic lightning in a bottle that they can get going. And I appreciate that. I really do. But hanging private property taking a private business wants to come to town and you're going to tax everybody else in order to do it, it's just not right. But
no, it isn't, and it's not right for you guys to have to pay for something that it's just like you say. Maybe the 2,000 people will come, maybe not. But why didn't Eugene agree to it? They have more than we do.
Yeah, Yeah, they didn't think it was that that great of a deal. And one of the biggest falsehoods that has been foisted upon cities for a long time, major sports teams coming in there will make you wealthy. And when you actually figure out all the taxpayer incentives, certain people get wealthy. The team owners get really wealthy, most importantly. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my takeaway. So,
well, I just don't know why the Oakland A's left here. And I'm sure it was a money thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that there's not going to be that many people that's going to be there. There really isn't. I mean, and what is it for? For the summertime? And then after that?
I think some of that, though, is why they would like us to build them a stadium that ostensibly we could then sell it or rent it to other people for other uses, you know, that kind of thing. And so the city of Medford then goes, ooh, something else here that we can, you know, sports, you know, and that is going to make us wealthy. So, you know, it's a difference of opinion I'll have with him. But my main thing is that protect the taxpayers and don't just take the hotel motel tax and rape that. Because the hotel motel tax could go to other uses in town that might be better than a ball game, than a ball field.
Right.
That's all. Appreciate the call, Monica. Thanks for that. And 770-5633. Let me go to next line. Hi, good morning. This is Bill.
Hello. Bill, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Jerry. Hey, here's my probably bad take on the issue of the Emeralds.
Okay.
I'm going to equate the Emeralds to China, and what Sam and Steve said regarding the mill as the Trump plan. And I'll just ask myself the question, who benefits from the whole Emeralds thing if there is a stadium built and if they do come here? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be you and me. It's going to be the government, the local government. They're going to have us on the hook for paying for the stadium.
Pretty much. You're right. But, of course, they will look at this because they take a certain amount of revenue from hotel motel. Anything that they think might help the hotel motel thing, I swear that that is looked at as the only wealth generator for Southern Oregon. We don't want to do anything actually proper that will hire someone, beyond minimum wage or just above minimum wage, cleaning services, you know, that sort of thing, hospitality.
Well, I'll tell you this, Bill. We already have the hotel situation taken care of, and I'll tell you how. And even the hotels know this.
What's that?
The location. They're right by I-5, for God's sake. We don't need, 40 people on a baseball team to fill up a motel room. There's going to be, like the lady, the previous caller said, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of people show up.
There might be more initially, and I wouldn't want to knock having baseball because I enjoy what they do right now with the Southern Oregon, you know, the college team that they have each year. You know, I appreciate what they do. That's great. And you see, and it's a wonderful family thing, but it's also done very inexpensively. And something tells me if you put it in a nice, big, shiny new stadium, it's going to be less family affordable. Just saying, okay?
I'll tell you what, I'd build, if they wanted to do it, here's what I'd do.
Okay.
I'd say, screw the $100 million, that's out the window. But we'll build you a stadium. It'll look just about like Miles Field did, that was built over by Walmart. And if you can fill that up, you know, that'll be our pilot program right there.
Let's see how much support there is for you. Okay. Jerry, I like that. Appreciate the call. Thanks for making it. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Spring has sprung, and it's time.
Service not provided by Dish.
Welcome to the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Gold price about $30.50. Well, last time I checked this morning, silver recovering just a little bit. I'm still looking at silver, and gold were sold off, I think, because of margin calls. And there comes a time in which you have to sell what you have, and everybody will always take gold. That is for sure. No one ever says, oh, gold, what's that? Nah, I don't like gold. You know, in a pinch, it always works there. That's one of the reasons why our friends over at Jay Austin & Company still continue to want to help people get silver and gold in their lives. Silver, gold, platinum, other precious items too. And if you have scrap gold and silver, you're looking at $3,000 gold and thinking, boy, I could get a few bucks here and pay off a few bills or maybe put it in my business or whatever the case might be. Talk with him today. You'll find him at 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland and 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. FortuneReserve.com. FortuneReserve.com. They'll help you on the, well, understand these markets here. But even though gold gave back a little bit through all of this stock market carnage, not really much in the grand scheme of things, and still very close to its all-time highs. And probably poised to move up, as it were, because gold tends to thrive, especially in uncertain times, special times, you know? I want to give you a heads up for tomorrow, and there's been a lot of conversation. We know that the wildfire map is probably going to be repealed, the wildfire hazard map, rather, that passed out of the Senate yesterday, talking with State Senator Noah Robinson earlier this morning, and he made that clear. It's no guarantee that it will pass in the House if it passes the Senate, but, you know, it looks like there's a lot of support, and even the Democrats are looking to do this, to make this happen. So, guardedly optimistic about that. What's it going to do with insurance? We don't know yet. We don't know. But I wanted to let you know that I invited Steve Yancey from Sky Park Insurance, another one of my big sponsors, and I've been working with him for years. You know, his number, 261-5444, if you wanted to call him today, 261-5444. Good people. He handles all the different types of insurance, and Lynn Barton is on the other side of it, taking care of the Medicare issues. 499-0958. You're turning 65, and boy, you're thinking, hey, I got to get a good Advantage plan or some sort of supplemental. Lynn will walk you through it. She walked Linda through it, and it just worked out really well. Her number is 499-0958. But either way, just great people. I think you'll enjoy that experience. But Steve is coming on the program tomorrow, okay? Steve, and we're going to be talking about insurance, what it's looking like. He's been telling me that it does appear that maybe when it comes to rural homeowners insurance, and that's been the big problem, that it might be loosening up a little bit. But one of the reasons why it was such a problem was because, well, huge losses. California wildfires, some Oregon wildfires too, and they're writing huge checks, and then they start rewriting the risk map for themselves. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow on Theory Thursday. Steve will be joining me in the 8 o'clock hour.
Oregon E-Deals has unbeatable offers for you. Grab a $25 gift certificate to Art.
Another great sponsor, right? 857, Drake's too, for that matter. 858, quick email of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. And it's on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. And Doobie writes to me this morning, hey, Bill, I like you, I love baseball, but I don't want to pay for a stadium. We used to have the Medford A's, I believe they were a single A team. They played at Miles Field over by the Armory, and then the last CBA, standards for minor league players and stadiums were significantly increased. Stadiums must have many more facilities now, including weight rooms and a clubhouse, to name a few. The old Miles Field would not even come close to meeting that standard. There is no facility here now that could meet the standard. You know, I'm with you there, Doobie. I would just say, dare say that Major League Baseball then needs to start building some. They need to start building some stadiums for their minor league teams if they want. By the way, it's their farm team. Okay, we'll talk tomorrow, okay?
Ready to upgrade your...